Morning. Today's Avner of Yud Zayin. We're on Tez Zayin Amud Beis. We are about a third of the way from the bottom of the Amud at the two dots starting with the words Makif Mekanim. We're discussing a wall that is made through a halachic mechanism, notably Lavud. And that means to say that either I could do this vertically or I could do this horizontally. Vertically, I'm just going to simply put a pole by followed by another pole. There are gaps between the poles. The gaps are less than three tefachim. The halach of Lavud demands that anything less than three tefachim is going to be considered as if it's filled in. And so, halachically, I have a wall. In reality, I have a bunch of poles on the ground, but because they're within three tefachim of one another, so halachically, we have a wall. And we can do this horizontally as well. And that means to say that if I've got three ropes, and the ropes are starting from the ground with gaps of less than three tefachim, and the actual width of the rope in total is a little bit over a tefach, so between now the gaps and the rope itself, so I now have 10 tefachim, so halachically, we have a wall. And that would work as well if you can imagine like a fence back with just the bars, the beams going across as opposed to anything moving up on it. There's no lattice; it's just simply three going across, and that's considered a wall halachically. So these are walls, and they would in fact create a rishus hayachid. That is what we learned together in the Mishnah. However, the Mishnah notes that there's a certain level of inferiority to these walls. These walls are not considered classic walls. And as a result of that being that they're slightly inferior, so even though min haTorah they created Rishus Yachid, so nevertheless there is a limitation in terms of how they can be used. Well, the truth of the matter is it's subject to machlokas. It's debated in the Mishnah in terms of whether or not there is any kind of limitation. In the Mishnah, we were treated to three different opinions in the Mishnah, actually. To be a little more accurate, there are four opinions in the Mishnah in terms of the nature of these walls. Going back to the Mishnah, you can take a look back at the Mishnah. First, the Mishnah told us the sheet of Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yehuda, back in the Mishnah, says, "Bishayara dibru div Rabbi Yehuda," that this allowance was only by Shayara, only if we were talking about a caravan, meaning that we were a group of people and we were traveling and we stopped on the way and we were more than a single person. A caravan indicates a collective group. As we're going to be seeing later on, it means at least a group of three. That is Shitas Rabbi Yehuda. The Chachamim in the Mishnah says that no, lo dibra b'shayara ela b'hoveh. No, shayara is just an example that was given. But the truth of the matter is that these walls would be good for anybody. And finally, there was a Shita of Rabbi Yosef Rabbi Yehuda in the Mishnah, and he says that any mechitza that's not made up of shesi and erev, meaning it has to be vertical and horizontal, and if it's only one of the two, so then, the simple reading of Rabbi Yosef Rabbi Yehuda in the Mishnah is Eina Mechitza, it's not a wall. Now that sounds very definitive, and it sounds like he is negating the concept of Mechitza altogether, of inferior Mechitza altogether. Stay tuned, because in a moment we're going to clarify the sheet of Rabbi Yosef Rabbi Yehuda. And then, as I pointed out, there really is a fourth opinion in the Mishnah, that's the Chachamim. And the Chachamim said, no, even if it only has just Shesi or just Erev, Shesi is a vertical, Erev is a horizontal. If it has either one of those two, so then it would be a wall. Okay, so those are the opinions in the Mishnah, and so what we need to do is we need clarification on these positions in the Mishnah. Yesterday when we started with the Gemara, so we went through a question of Rav Hamanuna. We weren't even sure what the question was. We deliberated what exactly the question of Rav Hamanuna was, but now that we're here, so we're going to go back and try to gain better understanding of the Mishnah and the various shitas of the Mishnah. Makifim b'kanim, b'shayar im b'yachid lo. So, sounds like that it works only for a caravan, but not for an individual. V'atanya, now obviously this is analysis in Shitas Rav Yehuda, because Rav Yehuda now is the first position in the Mishnah, and clearly limiting it only to a shayara, and the simplest reading of Rav Yehuda is that it's only for a shayara, and it's not for a yachid, it's not for an individual. Now the Gemara says, now we know otherwise. V'atanya, we have a braisa. Rav Yehuda Amar Kol Mechitza Shabbos Lo Itira Liyachid Yosem Mibes HaSayim. That when I have Mechitza Shabbos, now we'll add over here, when we say Mechitza Shabbos, we mean of the inferior type, the one we're describing right now. So an individual can use it, but only up to a Beis HaSayim. Beis HaSayim, 5,000 square amos. So that is the Chatzar HaMishkan, the area of the Chatzar HaMishkan. And so if an individual is going to be making an enclosure using these inferior walls, so you can do so, but only up to a Beis HaSayim. So because it's inferior, so therefore you're capped in terms of the total area that you're allowed to use. Huh. That's the Braisa. Now, the problem, of course, is that this clearly is Shitas Rabbi Yehuda. It says so, and it says that an individual can do it with the provision that you can only use it up to the point of Beis HaSayim. So, how does that work now with our Mishnah? Because our Mishnah simple reading is that this enclosure made up of inferior walls can only work for a rabbim and can't work for a yachid. And now we are confused. So the Gemara's response, Kedamar Rav Nachman, Litim Rav Bibi Bar Abai, Lo Nitzurcha Ela Litim Lehem Kol Tzarchem, Hachanami, Litim Lehem Kol Tzarchem. So the Gemara says we're going to borrow an answer. Rav Nachman, or some say it's Rav Bibi Bar Abaye, says that we're going to give them as much as they need. And so too, over here, we're going to give them as much as they need. So it's a borrowed answer. We don't really understand it yet, although I'll explain it right now. But we're going to learn it in context in just a moment. But if I could just take a moment to explain it, it actually works as follows. If I'm making an enclosure with these inferior walls, and I'm doing it so for an individual, you're capped. You can only make it up to 5,000 square amas, a base sign. If, however, you're making it for a shayara, there is no cap. For the collective caravan that needs now an enclosure, so you can make it as large as you want. Okay, that's the sheet of Rav Yehuda, and that's how you're going to be balancing the Mishnah and the Braisa. And in the Mishnah, even though it sounds like in the Mishnah that it only works for a caravan, the way we're going to understand the Mishnah is that it only works uncapped for a caravan. However, when an individual wants to make this inferior enclosure, so he can only make it up to a base of sign. Okay, that's how the answer works. And now the Gemara is going to give us this Rav Nachman Rav Bibi Bar Abaye solution in context. Hechi itmar, Rav Nachman Itim Rav Bibi Bar Abaye Ahadudnan. So he actually was responding to the following, the Mishnah. Actually, we go back to our Mishnah, and now we present the sheet to Rav Yosef Rav Yehuda. He says that a wall, by definition, has to be both Shesi and Erev. Now, Yosef Rav Yehuda, now we do have another Braisa. Echad Yachid, Echad Shayar Lechavalim, Uma Ben Yachid Leshayara, Yachid Nosin Lo Beis Asayim, Shnayim Nosin Lo Beis Asayim, Gimel Nasu Shayar V'Nosin Lehem Beis Sheish, Divrei Rav Yosef Rav Yehuda. In this Braisa, we say that according to Rav Yosef Rav Yehuda, if I have an enclosure made up of an inferior wall, so then I can, for one or two people, cap it at a base sign. For three people, it's also going to be capped. But the difference being is that for three people, now I'm going to be working for a base sign per person. So that's two sa'ah per person. So it will now be, for three people, six sa'ah. So the Gemara says that sheet is Rav Yosef Rav Yehuda. Chachamim omrim echad yachid ve'echad shayara. Now sheet is Chachamim is that there is no cap, and it doesn't matter who's making this enclosure of the either Shesi or Erev, there is no cap. You can make it as large as you want. Now uvavashal lo yeh beis asayim panui, as long as you don't make it more than a beis asayim extra in addition to what I need. Meaning if, let's say, the total need of the collective group is, let's say, for example, five sa'ah, so you can't, according to the Chachamim, even though there is no limit, there is a little bit of a limit. In that, I cannot exceed beyond what I need more than two sa'ah. We're going to talk more about this a little bit later on. Anyway, so but what we have over here is a discrepancy between Rav Yosef Rav Yehuda of the Braisa and that of the Mishnah. Meaning in the Mishnah, Rav Yosef Rav Yehuda seems to categorically reject an enclosure that's inferior. In the Braisa, he doesn't categorically reject it. In fact, in the Braisa, he says that for one or two people, so then you can make such an enclosure, provided that it's only the amount of 5,000 square amas. If it is three people, so then 5,000 square amas per person, 15,000 square amas. So that's how it comes out in the Braisa. That's much different than the Mishnah. So Amar Rav Nachman, Vitei Rav Bibi Bar Abaye, Lo Nitzurcha Ela Litim Lehem Kol Tzarchan. So again, so now the difference is going to be the following. Is that in the Mishnah, when the Mishnah says that any wall that is made up of an inferior nature, where it only has Shesi and it only has Erev, it's not a wall, meaning, translate, it's not a wall, they can make this enclosure as large as they want. Meaning you can't make it uncapped. That's what the Mishnah means when he says it's not a wall. But it is a wall, just with significant limitations. And what are the limitations? That for one or two people, a base sign. For three people, base sign per person. Okay. When all said and done now, if we can try to organize all this information, so we basically now have three opinions in front of us in terms of an enclosure that's made with either vertical poles or horizontal beams by themselves, and using the principle of Lavan now making an enclosure, and this enclosure now is, although halachically a wall, but in its construct, slightly less than a quote-unquote solid wall. So is this now halachic wall going to be considered inferior? Are there any limitations to it whatsoever? So the three opinions that we have up until this point in time are as follows. I'm presenting them in the order that we saw in the Mishnah. First sheet is Rav Yehuda. Rav Yehuda says that this enclosure made for a yachid it can only be made up to the point of a Beis HaSayim. If it's made for a Shayara, you can make it as large as you want with no limits and no caps. According to the Chachamim, if I made it for an individual, I can make it as large as I want. And if I made it for a Shayara, I can make it as large as I want. According to the Chachamim, these walls are no different, are no less qualitatively worse than solid, regular walls. And therefore, you can make it as large as you want. And then finally, Shitas Rav Yosef and Rav Yehuda, which is similar to Rav Yehuda, but not exactly. And that is that for a Yachid, you are capped at a Beis HaSayim. And then once you have a Shayara, three and above, so then you can make it larger, but you cannot make it as large as you want. You're still going to be capped at a Beis HaSayim per person. Okay, Ad Kan, that takes us now to the end of now what is a better understanding of the Mishnah. It's not complete as of yet. There still is one other opinion that is left unexplored. We're going to come back to that in just a bit. That's the Shita of the Chachamim at the end of the Mishnah. Anyway, Darush Rav Nachman Mishum Rabbi Nishmol Yachin Nosim Lo Beis HaSayim Beis Nosim Lo Beis HaSayim Gimel Nasu Shayram Nosim Lahem Beis Sheish. So Rav Nachman darshins, and when the Gemara uses the word darshin, it means that he's publicly expounding what the halacha is. And basically, he follows the Shita of Rav Yosi Rav Yehuda. And that for an individual, two. And for three individual, for three, a collective of three, so then you can make this enclosure up to six Beis HaSayim. So the Gemara says, now wait 1 second, Shavakta Rabban Vavtaka Rav Yosef Rav Yehuda. So after he darshaned, after he comes off the bima, and so they ask him, they said, you know, it's a funny psak. You left the Chacham and you're passing like Rav Yosef Rav Yehuda. It's a little bit strange. So Hadar Ukim Rav Nachman Amora Allah V'darash. So, the next day, Rav Nachman gets up and he darshins again. Or next day, next week, whatever the case is. And he darshins again and he says, Dvarim shamarti lefnechem ta'osein biyadi. He says, you know, last time we spoke about making an enclosure with using the principle of lavud. And I issued a psak, and he says, and I was wrong. And I made a mistake. Barm kach amru. This is what they said. Yachin osin lo beis asayim, shleim osin lo beis asayim, shloshen asu shayar v'noslem kol tzarcha. So for an individual, you work. You are limited to a Beis HaSayim, as two people as well. But once you're three people, so then you can make it as big as you want. Now this new pesach of Rav Nachman, right? It's not exactly what we expected, and the Gemara notes that as well. In that, in this new pesach of Rav Nachman, so who's he following like? So he's not exactly following like the Chachamim, meaning the Chachamim is a majority position. The Chachamim say that using such a wall has no limitations to it whatsoever. He doesn't paskin like the Chacham. Sorry. So he paskins like Rabbi Yehuda. So basically, so the Gemara says so, but it's a little bit strange. And the Gemara notes that as we now turn to the topic of Yitzayin Amid Aleph, Reisha Rabbi Yosef Rabbi Yehuda V'Sefer Rabbanan, meaning at first he's still sticking basically with the Rabbi Yosef Rabbi Yehuda Psak. Now the Gemara is going to make this point. It's also Rabbi Yehuda's Psak as well. But he's still sticking with the Rabbi Yosef Rabbi Yehuda as it relates to an individual. But then once you have a Shayara, then he shifts over to the Shitas Chachamim. So the Gemara says, yes, in Mishum Dekayavu B'Shitas Say. Yeah, because it's not just Rabbi Yosef Rabbi Yehuda, it's Rabbi Yosef Rabbi Yehuda coupled with his father Rabbi Yehuda. Meaning, if you ask the two of them, what is the story when you're making this inferior enclosure for an individual, they will both tell you that you can only make it up to a Beis HaSayim. So Rav Nachman says, so it's not an individual against the majority. There are actually two groups of Chachamim arguing this issue. Now, one group, we don't know how many there are, but the other group is made up of Rav Yehuda and Rav Yosef Rav Yehuda, and they will both tell you that for an individual, so you're going to be capped at making this enclosure at 5,000 square amas. But once you get to a Shayara, so now he's going to be leaving, he's going to be moving on to the Shita of the Chachamim, which is that you can make it with no limitations whatsoever. I'm Rav Gidol Amar Rav Shlosha B'Chamish Asurin B'Sheva Mutarin. So Rav Gidol Amar Rav says the following, that if I have three people, meaning I have a Shayara, so and I made an enclosure, and I made an enclosure for five saw, it would be Asur, and sometimes I can make an enclosure for seven saw, and it would be Mutar. So obviously this is a riddle. Meaning, how could it be that if I'm making this enclosure using these inferior walls, so if I made it for an area of five sa'ah, that would be prohibited, but if I made it for a larger area of two sa'ah larger of seven sa'ah, so then it would be mutter, that obviously is a riddle. How can that be? So So Amalei Amar Rav Achi. So they turned to Rav Gidon and they said, that doesn't make any sense. Did Rav really say this? So Amar Lehu Araisa Neviyeh V'Ksive D'Amar Rav Achi. I swear by the Torah, by the Neviim, by the Ksuvim, that this is in fact what Rav says. He made a Shvua to this effect. Amar Rav Ashi, my Kashi Dilma Achi Kamar. So Rav Ashi says, I'm not bothered by it whatsoever. I totally understand what he's saying. And he goes on to explain. Let's say the total amount of area that they needed was 6. And you made the enclosure using these inferior walls, and you enclosed 7. So that means to say, remember, we go back to the Mishnah, we're talking about a Shayara, and according to Shitas Chachamim, which we just learned is in fact the Psak, I can make a Kol Tzarchan. And even though they said Kol Tzarchan, which means that there are no limits, even that we pointed out in the Gemara, and Rashi, by the way, clarified, I didn't read the Rashi, but it says no cap. It doesn't mean no cap whatsoever. It means that you don't have to hold yourself to a base assign per person. You can make it larger. But larger, even as we say larger, we mean to say that you can make it as much as you need, as much room as you need. But once you establish how much you need, you can't go above that. So you figure out what your needs are. You're going to make it for that need, and you can't go tufsa above that. So let's now, with Rav Ashi's example over here, let's put that into practice. So let's say now I'm making an enclosure for Shabbos, and I only need 6 sa'ah of room. Okay? So each base assign, each 2 sa'ah is 5,000 square amas. So if we're going to multiply that by 3, so now I'm making the enclosure for 15,000 square amas. Okay, large area. But that's how much we determine we need. And now, instead of making it for 6 sa'ah, I made it for 7 sa'ah. 1 sa'ah additional. That's fine. You're within your right to do that. Because we follow like the Shita of the Chachamim. I can make it as large as I need. And as large as I need would include even making it up to 2 sa'ah larger. Up to, but not 2 sa'ah. Just up to 2 sa'ah larger. So fine, over here I only made it 1 sa'ah larger. And that would be fine. And now I can use the entire area that was enclosed by these loved mechitzas. So afilu b'sheva mutarin. Lo hutzrichu ela. Now we have girsa issues over here in the Gemara. And I'm going to go with the Gaon's girsa. And lo hutzrichu ela shalosh vihikifu b'chamesh. But let's say that I only have a need area of 3. And I am use these love and mechitzas to enclose for 5. So now what I did is I exceeded. And more than the allowable excess. The allowable excess is up to 2. Anytime you go 2 above what your needs are, so that even according to the Chachamim would be no good. So here, I'm sorry, keep the word Sheva. That part I take back. So in other words, I only needed 3. I made the enclosure for 7. So then, even 5 would be Aser. Meaning to say that since I went over the allowable excess, so then the whole area is going to be Aser. Okay. So now we go back to Rav's statement, and we figured out the riddle, meaning it's not a riddle. In other words, it just simply means that if I find out what my needs are, and I went basically up to what my needs are, I went just a little bit over, that's perfectly fine. If, however, I determine what my needs are, and then I went significantly over, so then the whole thing is no good. The entire enclosure is no good. Good. That's how I understand Rav Gidol Marav. So the Gemara says, "V'ela hadikani v'vashalei b'esasayim panui ma'ila panui mi'adam." So the Gemara says, "Now I go back to what we learned on the bottom of the previous amud, and that is that I cannot go above b'esasayim panui." Now, what does that mean at this point in time? It sounds like what it means is per person. And the Gemara says, "No, lo panui mi'kalim." So that doesn't mean per person. It means whatever our needs are, like we just got done explaining. Meaning, we will determine the area that we actually need. In other words, we're stopping for Shabbos. We're going to be setting up a camp. We're going to be making an enclosure. We're going to be using these loved walls. So we're going to be determining based on the animals that we have, whatever. They know. In other words, they know how much they need is. So they can now make an enclosure up to whatever their needs are. And they can even make it a little bit larger. They just simply can't go 2 sa'ah above what they determine their needs to be. Itmar, the Gemara continues, Shlosha, Umesach, Amehem, Shnaim, Vinatosfu, Alehem. So the Gemara now entertains the following discussion, and that is, let's say as they stopped for Shabbos, so there were 3, so they had a shayar, they had a caravan, they made an enclosure, they used loved walls, and then on Shabbos itself, Rachmanus, one of them died. turning their status now from a shayara to a yachid. And now a yachid was not allowed to make such a large enclosure. So now, is this enclosure going to be affected by the fact that their population went from 3 down to 2? Or, alternatively, they were 2 people, which means that the status of a yachid, that they only can make an enclosure of a beis asayim, and now, on Shabbos, magically somebody appeared. Now that, of course, is a little bit strange. How does somebody appear here over here on Shabbos? Where did he travel from? How did he get around the tchum issues? So those are all wonderful and lovely questions, but right now, I'm just going to be dealing with the more abstract issue of he's here now. And so now we have gained in population, 50% population growth as we went from 2 down now to 3. And now, can I, is the allowable area that can be used now is going to be a lot larger. Now, again, we understand on Shabbos, you're not going to be changing the parameters of this enclosure. So maybe over here the question is that I made the enclosure too big, and then somebody on Shabbos came. And so even though before Shabbos I wasn't allowed to make such a large enclosure, but now on Shabbos itself, with I have this new person, and now we have changed status from being a yachid now to a shayara, can I make use of it? Now, that would be a way to understand the Gemara's question over here. Anyway, so, but these two questions are really running side by side. They're parallel to one another. And the question is that with a change of population on Shabbos, is that going to affect the status of this enclosure? When was the status of this enclosure set? Obviously, with the onset of Shabbos, the Bein HaShemashos period, as Shabbos comes in, so that's when these enclosures are set. Are they subject to being changed? Rav Huna of Rav Yitzchak, so it is a debate amongst the Amoraim, Chanamar Shabbos Goremes, V'Chanamar D'Yurin Gorman. So over here, this is exactly the debate of the Amoraim, where one of them says, we don't know at this point in time, know which one says which, but one of them says Shabbos is Gorim, meaning whatever the status of that enclosure was going into Shabbos, that's its status, and it will stay that status regardless of change of population. On the other hand, the other position is no. And you have to look at the population. It's the population that affects what I can build, the size of the enclosure I can build, and if that population changes, even on Shabbos itself, so the status of that enclosure will also change even on Shabbos itself. Now, it's a standard of Huna Damar Shabbos Garemes Damar Rabbah. Now, the Gemara says, now, I know that Rav Huna is the one who says that Shabbos is a Garem, and I know that based on the following. Because consider now what was taught by Rabbah by me, Rav Huna, they asked the following question, from Rav Huna, by me, Rav Yehuda. So this question over here is predicated on information that we're going to be seeing later in the Masechta, and that is that I want to combine two chatzeros that are contiguous one to the other, a wall separating the two of them. So if a wall separates the two of them, and there's no allowance to pass from one to the other, there's no Pesach, so then each one of them has to be considered separate chatzeros, and they cannot make an erev together. If, however, there is a Pesach allowing people from chatzer to go onto the other chatzer, so then they could, if they want to, they can combine and make an erev together, allowing people from one chatzer to carry over to the other chatzer. And let's say on Shabbos itself, the Pesach was closed, or the window which allowed passage from one chatzer to the other was closed. So what happens now with the Erev that they already made? Or, more to the point, what is now going to be the status of these two chatzeros now that on Shabbos there's no longer any Pesach allowing entrance from one to the other, from one chatzer to the other? So V'amr li Shabbos hov v'hutra hutra. So Rav Huna's response is, the answer is very simple. Since going into Shabbos there was an allowance to carry from one chatzer to another, so too on Shabbos itself, even though the Pesach is no longer intact, even though the chalon is no longer intact, you could still carry from one chatzah to the other. And that statement was made by Rav Huna Tistayim. So the Gemara says, so you're right. Shabbos is a garim according to Rav Huna. We just saw that in the case of the two chatzeros. We can now assume over here as well. When the enclosure was made going into Shabbos, whatever its status was going into Shabbos, even though the parameters have changed on Shabbos itself, the population has changed on Shabbos, nevertheless, Rav Huna would say Shabbos is a garim. So Lema Rav Huna Rav Yisrael Beplugta de Rav Yosef Rav Yehuda Kemiflugi. Now the Gemara says, let's see. If we can now take the machlokas, which we just learned together, about changing populations on Shabbos and the question of whether or not the status of an enclosure is going to change on Shabbos itself, let's see if we can run that parallel with another machlokas, and that is the following. Did not we learn in the Mishnah? And we will see this later in the Masechta. Chatzer shenifrit samishtei ruchosav. Let's say I have a chatzer where two of the walls fell down. V'chein bai shenifrit samishtei ruchosav. or let's say a house where two of the walls of the house fall down. Or let's say I had a mavui which was adjusted before Shabbos, but then either the korah or the lechi fell. So Rav Yehuda says for the remainder of the Shabbos, it's still mutter to carry in that area. And Rabbi Yossi Omri, Mutarn Loso Shabbos, Mutarn Loso Lava, Vim Asurn Loso Lava, Asurn Loso Shabbos. And Rabbi Yossi says, you got to be kidding. Can I use this now going forward? And how about next Shabbos? Can I use this enclosure? The answer is obviously no. Meaning the doesn't have four walls around it. And in the case of the Mavu, it's not adjusted. I can't use it for future Shabbosim. If I can't use it for future Shabbosim, I can't use it for the remainder of this Shabbos. So now it sounds like it's pretty good. It sounds like the machlokas that we had amongst the Amorim between Rav Huna and Rav Yitzchak is in fact the same machlokas Satanaim between Rav Yehuda and Rav Yossi. And every time the Gemara does this, you know that what the Amorim do not want to do is they do not want to be pigeonholed. They don't want to be limited to just one opinion of a machlokas Tanaim. And so what they're going to try to argue is that the two machlokasim are not necessarily running parallel with one another, and there and a distinction can be drawn between the two issues. Lema Rav Huna Damarka Rav Yehuda Rav Yitzchak Damarka Rav Yossi. But first the Gemara sets it up, because it sounds really good. Rav Huna holds like Rav Yehuda. Rav Yehuda takes the position that once a status is set going into that Shabbos, it remains even though the actual parameters have changed. And that is the Shita of Rav Huna. That is the Shita of Rav Yehuda. And the Gemara says, and it sounds like we have a match. And it sounds like Rabbi Yitzchak, who says that in the case of changing populations, so then the status does in fact change. And that conforms to the Shita of Rav Yossi, who says that when I have a structure where the walls fell down, I have a mavui, where the lechi, the korah, fell off, so it's no longer going to be a good mavui for the remainder of that Shabbos. It sounds wonderful. So I'm lecha Rav Huna, anadamri da'afilu l'Rav Yossi. And Rav Huna will say as follows, I can even go like the Shita of Rav Yossi, because at kan lo kam Rav Yossi asam ela delasin l'mechitzas. So because, look, consider over there, the walls fell down. You no longer have the structure. So that's why Rav Yossi in that case will tell you, you can't carry in that area anymore because it's no longer an enclosed area. But hachis and lemechitzas, but over here, the walls are intact. The only changing dynamic over here is that the population has changed. We no longer are considered a shayara, we're now a yachid. We're no longer considered a yachid, we're now a shayara. But the structure is still intact. The cases are wildly different. And Rav Huna says, look, Rav Yossi would agree with me in this case over here. And Rav Yitzchak Amar Anadamri Afilu Rav Yehuda. And Rav Yitzchak will argue the same. Look, as far as Rav Yehuda was concerned, he would agree with me. Because Adkan Lo Kam Rav Yehuda Asam Ela Di Isnu Li Diurim. Because over there, you still had the same residents over there. The population has not been changed. But Hacha, less than Li Diurim. But over here, you simply don't have the population anymore. How can you treat this area like a Shayara, where a Shayara needs a minimum of three, and we no longer have three, so the population has changed? Admittedly, as much as I'm passionately trying to argue this, I understand that it's harder to argue, right? The previous argument of this of the structural change versus the population change, and that for as long as it's structurally sound, it's going to be the same. Admittedly, that's a little easier to hear. Over here, where the structure changed, and there we're not gonna change the status, but the population changes. Oh, for sure we're gonna change the status. Admittedly, it's a little bit of a more difficult argument to make, but the Gemara tries to make that argument. And finally, finishing up this first sugya this morning, Shitas Chachamim in the Mishnah. So now we have gone over, when I have a wall made up of the principle of Lavan, where it's just horizontal rope going across, and positioned in a way now where I have a halachically valid wall, so is there any limitation in terms of an enclosure made with such a wall? So that has been the discussion through the first half of today's daf. And we went through the Shitas of Rabbi Yehuda, the Chacham, and Rabbi Yosef, Rabbi Yehuda. And we went through the Psak Halacha. And we went through then what you can do in terms of making it excess above that which I actually need. And we talked about changing population and whether or not the status of this enclosure is going to change on Shabbos. Good. So those are the discussions we have until this point in time. And finally, Shitas Chachamim. What is Shitas Chachamim? So in the Mishnah, the Chachamim disagree with the Rabbi Yosef and Rabbi Yehuda. That's great. That means to say that they agree with the Chachamim of the earlier part of the Mishnah. And that creates a redundancy, and we see this question all the time throughout Shas. So Chachamim Marmim Echem Mishnei Tvarim Hainu Tanakama. The Chachamim are reiterating that which the Tanakama said. They don't seem to be introducing a new idea. You just go back to the Chachamim, and you know what the Chachamim say. That when I have an enclosure, regardless of what my the group that it is including, whether an individual, whether a population, it's simply going to work. with no limits, with no caps. So the Gemara says, Yikabeinah, Yachab Yishuv. So the Gemara says, well, no, there is a difference, and that is that let's say it's an individual, and let's say it's B'Yishuv, meaning it's not even traveling, meaning we're making this enclosure just simply in the city. And so that means to say, that the subtle difference between the Chachamim and the Tanakhama, the Mishnah, is that the Tanakhama allows for the enclosure, but only when traveling. Meaning, even according to the Chachamim, who was more relaxed and more expansive, but even according to the Tanakhama of the Mishnah, it's still going to be limited only to when they're traveling. But meanwhile, according to the Chachamim of Rav Yosi, Rav Yehuda, so no limitation whatsoever. Meaning that this enclosure has no cap to it. You can make it as large as you want. Again, up to what your needs are. And on top of that also, it can be made both when traveling and also even in the city as well. Even when you're not traveling, the enclosure would be perfectly good. In terms of how we know that that's the breakup of the Mishnah, so see the last Rashi before the Mishnah, where Rashi over here goes on to explain that we see this because the Chachamim, the later Chachamim of the Mishnah, is countering the position of Rav Yosi and Rav Yehuda with a proper understanding of Rav Yosi and Rav Yehuda, contrasting that to the Shita of the Chachamim. So we have gained an understanding that this, in fact, is the Shita of the Chachamim as opposed to the Tanakhama of the Mishnah. Okay. We are going to move on now to the next Mishnah. The next Mishnah now and final Mishnah here of the first Perek of Erevin. We start off our Badvarim Patru B'machaneh. So when you go out to Milchama, when you go out to war, so there are certain relaxations, there are certain leniencies that are allowed to the soldiers as they're going out to Milchama. And that is four that are going to be enumerated here in the Mishnah. You can collect wood from wherever you want. So in other words, we understand that the soldiers over here are in times of great need, and so in terms of providing firewood, so they can collect wood from wherever they want. And basically, as far as firewood is concerned, there's no act of theft. It's not considered gzela, regardless of where they take it from. Number two, peturim mirchitzas yadayim. They're going to also get an allowance that they can eat without having to wash their hands, and a midmai, and also they get a relaxation from the rules of demai and malariv, and they also don't have to make an eruv. The reason why this Mishnah is over here in Erevin, as you guessed it, is because of the fourth of these rules in which they are given a dispensation. They don't have to make an eruv. That's why this Mishnah over here is inserted in Erevin. Why the end of the first parak? Not sure. Because, as we're going to see in just a moment, the Erev that's being discussed over here is Erev Tchum, which we haven't yet touched on. Anyway, I'm ahead of myself. Okay, so there are four dispensations that are given now to the soldiers of war. Tanu Rabbanan, we start with the Gemara, Machna, Yosef, Samachama, Rishus, Mutarim, Begazel, Eitzim, Yevashim, Rav Yehuda, Bentema, Omer, Av Chonin, Bechol Makum, Ova Makum, Shenargim, Sham, Nikbarim. So here the Gemara quotes a Braisa, which also gives out various rules, dispensations as it relates to the soldier. So the first one is that when you go out to war, Melchemes Rishos. Now there are two types of wars that are fought. There's a Melchemes Mitzvah and Melchemes Rishos. Melchemes Mitzvah in terms of conquering Eretz Yisrael, the defense of Eretz Yisrael, wiping out a Malik, those are examples of Melchemes Mitzvah. Melchemes Rishos is when you're doing an annexation. So that is Melchemes Rishos. Really interesting Rashi over here. Take a look at the first Rashi in the Gemara, Melchemes Rishos. Stam Melchemes Rishos mi Melchemes Yoshua ve'Elech. Shi'aisa Melchemes Mitzvah. So Rashi over here gives a historical distinction. When we went into Eretz Yisrael at the time of Yoshua and fought, that's Melchemes Mitzvah. And basically, any war after that is going to be considered Melchemes Rishos. Now, that's not an absolute, right? The example where Shaul went to war against Amalek, we'll call that a Melchemes Mitzvah, it's not a Melchemes Rishos. Wiping out Amalek obviously is a Mitzvah in the Torah. So, okay, so but it's certainly an interesting way to look at it. And that Yoshua, mitzvah. Anything after Yoshua, basically, is Mechemes Rishos. So, the Bryce over here says that when you're going out for Mechemes Rishos, Mutarim begets la'etzim yevashim. So you can take dry wood, says the Bryce, and Rav Yehuda ben Tema in the Bryce says that you can make encampment wherever you want, and uvamakum shenaragim sham nikbarim, and you can be buried in any location that you want, and we're going to be discussing all these points in more detail. Number one, Mutarim begets la'etzim yevashim, hai takanta di Yoshua. So the Gemara says, I don't understand. This is one of the takanas of Yoshua. The Gemara in Baba Kamma teaches us that Yoshua made 10 takanas after conquering and dividing the land. So there were 10 institutions that Yoshua made. Basically, we're obviously not going to go through all 10 right now, but basically it was a way of keeping the peace, meaning that to create a social contract where we can live with one another, where we're no longer traveling in the desert, we're now settling in Eretz Yisrael. So basically to keep the peace between people. So various institutions that Yoshua made, and Amar Mar, Sar Tanayim, Hisna Yoshua Shiyu, Marin Bechorshin, Umalakten, Eitzim, Misadoseim. So one of them is that people can go ahead and take wood from the field, and no one should be makbid, and it shouldn't start a fight just because they take some wood. So the Gemara says, Hasam Bizmi Vihiga, the Gemara says, yes, that's true. But that's talking about thorns, thistles, that's talking about inferior low-lying bushes that no one should be particular about. But Hacha Bashar Eitzim, but over here we're talking about good wood. And so if I go onto somebody else's property and take their wood, their logs, so that's something where that wasn't under the dispensation of Yoshua, and under normal circumstances you're not allowed to do that. But for the soldier, so that you're allowed to do. So Inami Hasam Mechavarm Hacha Betlushim, or the Gemara says another distinction, and that is whether it was connected to the ground or detached from the ground. So if it was detached from the ground, so the so over here now, clearly the owner of that wood already cut it for the purposes of firewood. Under normal circumstances, Yoshua did not allow you to take that off somebody else's property, only when it was connected to the ground. But if you're a soldier, so you can take even something that was already cut up. Because again, the society understands that the soldiers need to be taken care of, and so therefore an allowance was given to the soldier that he could take such firewood. Inan, the Gemara says another distinction, Hasam Balachim, Hacha B'Yaveshim, it depends whether they're dry or whether they're moist. So if they are dry, so they are now going to be able to be used for firewood, and under normal circumstances, you can't take them. The owner of that property obviously now wants to use it for himself. If, however, you're a soldier, because again, the understanding is that the soldiers are in a time of need, so then you are, in fact, allowed to take even dry firewood. Okay, so various understandings of what was included within the dispensation of Yoshua when conquering Eretz Yisrael versus what's the extra allowance that's allowed over here for our soldiers who are fighting Mechemes Rishos. Next on the Braisa that we just went through is Rabbi Yehuda ben Tema Omer Afchonim b'chol makom v'makom shenaragim sham nikbarim shita meis mitzvahu. So the Gemara says they could be buried wherever they die. The Gemara says, isn't that obvious? Don't they have the category of a meis mitzvah? Meis mitzvah konim makomo. So the Gemara in a number of places talks about a meis mitzvah. If Rachmanis somebody dies and nobody's there to take care of that meis, so konim makomo, the meis is going to be buried exactly where he dies. And you don't have to take the body, you don't have to move the body. Rashi notes over here, this is another one of the 10 institutions that was made by Yehoshua. So the Gemara says, L'tzricha afagav d'islei kovrim, as we now turn to the top of the Amud Beis. And the Gemara says, no, over here, we're talking about a situation where there are people who are going to take care of his, that could take care of his kfur, of his burial. Under those circumstances, so no, now he no longer qualifies under the category of a meis mitzvah. So from a meis mitzvah standpoint, he's not konim makomo. On the other hand, he was a soldier. And as such, as a soldier, so now he's given a special dispensation that he can be buried right there and then. The Tanya Ezu meis mitzvah, kol she'in lo kovrim, korev acherim onim oso, ein zeh meis mitzvah. So the Braisa over here gives us what the parameters of a meis mitzvah is. And that is nobody's there, no family member is there to take care of his burial. If, however, you would call out and say that the person died and family members would come, so that's not a meis mitzvah. So the Gemara says, fine, a meis mitzvah konim makom v'atanya. Now you're telling me that a meis mitzvah is in fact going to acquire the place in which he died. The Gemara says, what are you talking about? Moti meis muta b'sracha mefaneo liyamin. Asracha o l'smol asracha. So let's say somebody dies, and he died in a rishus harabim. So burying him in the rishus harabim would be a public hazard. And so you're not going to bury him in the rishus harabim, you're going to move him to the side. Stay bor v'stay near. Let's say that the choice was to bury him either in a field that was already plowed or a field that was unplowed, mefaneo l'stay bor. So you move him to the unplowed field. Stay near v'stay zera. Let's say the one field was plowed and the other one was planted. So mefaneo l'stay near. You move the mace to a plowed field, not a planted field. Ayushtem, Nirushtem, Zrushtem, Boros. If, however, all things are equal, both fields are plowed, both fields are planted, both fields are, both fields are empty. So Mifanelucho Ruchshir. So then you have the volition in terms of where it could be buried. So what we have over here is clearly this idea that for a Meis Mitzvah, so you don't just simply bury him right there and then where he dies, meaning that you have to have a little bit of judicious nature. You have to move the body so that he doesn't serve as a public hazard. Or if there is a place of quote-unquote more convenience, if you will, so then you bury him over there. So Amar Abibi Hacha B'meis Muta Al HaMeitzar Askinan Mitoch Shenit Nereshus L'Fenosim N'HaMeitzar Mifanei L'Chol Ruch Sheyirseh. So Rabibi gives the answer, which really is the intuitive, and it's basically is kind of built into the question. And that is that, look, you're not going to bury somebody on the road, right? The word Meitzar, by the way, usually means a border. Over here in this context, it just simply means basically a road. And that is, you're not going to bury somebody on the road. In other words, you're not going to create a public hazard where now people are going to be walking around because now somebody's going to be buried right in the middle of the road. And consider the Kohanim now, who every time they're going to walk down the road, they're going to become Tameh. So that even for a Meis Mitzvah, it's a given that's not going to happen. So you're going to pick up and you're going to move the Meis Mitzvah. Once you are now moving the Meis Mitzvah, so now you get to make these executive decisions of, well, are we going to be burying him in that field or in that field? Well, which one now has been more worked? Which one has been more processed? Which one is more barren? So now you get to make those executive decisions once you're in the process of moving him anyway. Now we go back to the Mishnah. Okay, so we're talking about the dispensations of a soldier. First, we quote the Mishnah with four dispensations. We really haven't touched the Mishnah yet. We then quoted a Braisa right after the Gemara, where the Braisa tells us about the dispensations of, first of all, qualifying what kind of war we're talking about. We're talking about Mechemes Rishus. And the Braisa talks about stealing wood. Sorry, there is no act of stealing when it comes to wood. And Rabbi Yehuda ben Tema talking about where he's going to get buried, where Rachmanus, the soldier, were to die. And now what the Gemara is going to be discussing is the Gemara tackled all the issues by the Braisa. Now the Gemara is going to go back to the Mishnah and tackle all the dispensations that were mentioned in the Mishnah. So over here, what allowances are given? And that's Mayim Rishonim, washing before eating bread. Avamayim Achronim Chova, but washing your hands after. After the meal, that's an obligation. Why is it an obligation? Because there's corrosive salt, and you take it and you touch your eyes, and it's going to blind you. You can go through an entire core of salt. That's a lot of salt. And you're going to find small trace amounts of this kind of corrosive salt. And so that means to say that it is going to be it's going to be just even the smallest amount, trace amount, even in large quantities, it's going to require you to wash your hands after the meal. So what if, let's say, I'm measuring salt, meaning I'm not eating salt, I'm just simply measuring salt. What would be the halacha as well? Do I need to wash my hands after measuring the salt? Now, in our Gemara, Amalei Halomi Bai. So in our Gemara, he says that shouldn't be a question. Now, it's not clear what the answer is in our Gemara. He just simply says it shouldn't be a question. It sounds like from Rashi, and I don't know what else to make of it. There's this short Rashi, right after the words Kayal Milchamai, where Rashi says Kol Shekain. Now, I'm looking for the words Kol Shekain in the Gemara, and they're not in the Gemara, which leads me to believe that Rashi over here is operating with a different gear set that we have in the Gemara. There's no Kol Shekain coming up later in the Gemara, so I think what Rashi's doing over here is working with a different gear set, which is, and the one-word explanation of Rashi, it starts with that you do have to wash your hands. Meaning to the question of, you measured salt, do I need to wash my hands? And the answer is, of course. Meaning, if the whole issue is that there's trace elements of corrosive salt, where all it needs to do is make contact with your eyes and you're going to become blind, so it's not only after the meal, but even if you're just measuring salt, so then for sure you have to wash your hands. That's what I think is happening over there in Rashi. Rashi's operating with a different girsa. Umi demai. Before I go on, let's just at least just touch on the issue, and that is Mayim Achronim. The Gemara over here talks about Mayim Achronim. The Gemara over here talks about the value of Mayim Achronim and how important it is. And Minhag Yisrael is that many, many Jewish people, good Jewish people, do not do Mayim Achronim. This is not a new phenomena. This takes us way back. You can see the top Tosfos over here, where Tosfos notes already, we're talking now 800 years ago, at least, where the minhag was not to do mayim achronim, not to wash your hands after the meal. Tosfos writes on the very top of the Amud, mayim achronim chova, achshav lo nagu b'mayim achronim. Now we're not knowing this mayim achronim, de ein melech sodom is matzu b'neinu, so we don't have melech sodom, so therefore we don't do mayim achronim. Inami, lefi she'inanu regim, letabla etzbosa b'melech achar achila. Also, we don't dip our fingers in salt after the meal. So in other words, there's no reason why we should be doing mayim achronim. Okay, so obviously Tosfos over here engenders a lengthy discussion, which we are not going to have, but it obviously is the issue, and that is that if there was a takanas chachamim, and we know the reason why there was a takanas chachamim, and the reason is no longer in force, so then could we just simply dispense with the takanas chachamim? Now, obviously, that is a huge topic, and it covers so many areas and so many facets, and over here, Tosfos is weighing in on this issue, specific to that of mayim achronim. And he justifies the reason why mayim achronim is not done is because the reason is no longer intact. Okay. The obviously much more to discuss. We're going to continue, and we're going to be finishing up over here the first perek of Erevin. Umi demai, if you're a soldier, so you can dispense with demai. We've gone over time and again demai. The idea is that when I go to an amaretz and I purchase my produce from an amaretz, and he took off trumas amaisos, and he tells me he takes off trumas amaisos, and nevertheless there is a special takana midirabanan that I have to take trumas amaisos as well, since the amaretz is not careful in his following of halacha. So therefore, as a chomer de rabbanan, I now have to take off trumas amaisos again. This is the halacha of demai, an entire masechta dedicated to this topic, which we don't cover in the daf yomi because this mishnah has no gemara on it. So did not we learn to the mishnah machilan saniyim demai vesach sanai demai. Poor people can be given demai, and the soldiers can be given demai as well. Dispensations of demai, and the reason why there's a dispensation is because it goes back to what I just said. Is that we basically know the Amarites took off Shumas and Maestros. The majority of them do. This is a Chomer de Rabbanan. And the de Rabbanan realizing, even though they made a Takana, built into the Takana allowances. Notably, poor people can eat demai without being mafish Shumas and Maestros, as can soldiers. Amar Rav Huna Tana Beis, Shamay Omrim, Eim Achilas Anim Demai, Vesach Sanai Demai, Ubeis Ol Omrim Achilas Anim Demai, Vesach Sanai Demai. So over here now, a Braisa, which brings this down as a machlokes between Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel. Beis Hillel says that you can give the poor people demai and the soldiers as well, and Beis Shammai does not allow it. Why is this price important? Meaning, when all said and done, we are going to pass on like Beis Hillel, which we already learned back in the Mishnah, is in fact the accepted halacha, and the baskel that we learned about just a couple days ago. So what exactly is the significance of this price telling us now that Beis Shammai disagrees? So, Tosfos, third Tosfos in the Yom, which says, Lo Shayach Kan, Lakshos vichitaim de bechamai asalish main de kashmalam di mishkachet tana de amar ein machil and lo techushla de bechamai hu vichiagam and amina beperk basra di avamos. So an idea expressed at the end of Masech di Avamos, which Tosfos over here borrows, and the idea is that now we are more informed. If we ever come across a brisa that talks about you're not allowed to give the mic to the poor people and you're not allowed to give the mic to the soldiers, now we're more informed. We're like, oh, that brisa. Oh yeah, that price is going like Beis Shammai. Yeah, it happens to be. I know machlokes between Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel whether I can give demai to the poor. Don't worry about that price. That price is shitas Beis Shammai. Okay, good. So for purposes of being more knowledgeable and being able to reject shitas and prices that aren't the accepted halacha, so now we're more informed. Amri debei Rav Yana lo shanu ala erev chatzera. Sorry, let me read the heading. Umei la arev, and the soldiers do not have to set up an erev. And they're given a relaxation in Eruv. What kind of Eruv are we talking about? Amid debei Rav Yana loshanu ala Eruv echatzeros. The relaxation that's given to them is Eruv chatzeros. The idea that if we are living in a common area and we're sharing a common area, that in order to be able to carry in the common area so that we need to unify by everyone contributing food and putting that food in a central location. Again, all this we're going to be talking about in much greater detail later in the Masechta. That's the allowance that's given to the soldiers. But they are chayav and erev tchumim. In other words, they cannot go beyond tchum. Obviously, if war and a campaign demands that they go beyond tchum, so then fine. But in other words, but if they're just in camping, so even though they're giving a relaxation by erev chatzeros, they're not given a relaxation in terms of erev tchum. So the Gemara says, in this distinction, how do I know that such a distinction is a good one? Didni Rabbi Chiya lokin al erev tchum in Dvar Torah. That a person is going to be subject to malchus if violating Erev Tchum. Mask of Rabbi Yonas on Bechilokin on Lav Sheba Al. Oh, you're going to get Malkus for this Lav? What do you mean? The Lav comes to us through the word Al. And right now the Gemara thinks that if the Torah says the word Al, which we understand translates as a word to mean don't. But that's not a formal Lav. Right now, for a moment, the Gemara is going to entertain the idea that a Lav is only going to be can only be introduced with the word Lo. So the Gemara says, but that's not true. Maskef l'revachar b'yakov ela mi'ata d'chziv. Al tifnu ela avos ve'ela yidonim. So hachanami de'lalaki? No. The Pasuk, when talking about not turning to people who are involved in necromancy, so the Torah uses the word al. And you know that you're going to get Malkus for that. And don't suggest otherwise. So Rav Yonasan hachi kakashale. So the Gemara says, no. You misunderstood. Rav Yonasan knew that the word al can introduce a lav in the Torah. But rather, you're going to get Malkus for this. So, Lav Shenitin Lazarus Mises Basin, Mechol Lav Shenitin Lazarus Mises Basin, and Lokin Alav. Meaning, this Lav regarding the Pasuk of Tchumim is really more for the person not violating Shabbos. Not violating Shabbos, that comes with it a Chiyuv Skila, Chiyuv Misa, Mises Basin. It's a capital crime, capital punishment. And we know that when the Lav comes in that context, so the Lav is, you cannot get Malkus for such a Lav. That lav is only for the punishment of Mises Beis Din, and there is no Malkus for that. We discussed this extensively in the third parak of Malkus, and we also discussed it earlier in Masechta Shabbos, and over here as well now, in the first parak of Erevin. So, Am Ravashi, Miksiv al Yotzi, al Yetziksiv. So the Gemara says, so Ravashi defends. Ravashi says, no, we're right over here. The Pasuk does not say al Yotzi, that a person should not carry something out, but rather al yetze, that the person himself should not go out. So that means to say that if a person himself goes beyond a certain parameter, so that is a lav in the Torah, not connected with chilul Shabbos, that is not going to be a isur deraisa of with Mises Beis Din. This is just simply a lav connected with going beyond a person's perimeter on Shabbos, going beyond tchum. So that is an isur deraisa. And so therefore, when the soldiers were given the allowance that they could dispense with Eruv, it means only Eruv Chatziris, but not Eruv Itchum, as that is an Isser Daraisa. Hajan Lach Mavoi, this is the end of the first parak of Erevin, Mirsa Hashem, tomorrow. We start the second parak of the Masechta. Let us just use this opportunity to review. Our first topic of discussion today, which took us through the first half of today's daf, is that I make an enclosure of inferior walls. Under those circumstances, is there any limitation to the enclosure that's made? Major machlokus amongst the Tanaim, four opinions in the Mishnah. The first thing we did is just simply clarify the four opinions of the Mishnah. The shitas of Rabbi Yehuda and the Chachamim and Rabbi Yosef and Rabbi Yehuda all clarified in the Gemara. After clarifying their positions, what's the halacha? Rav Nachman issued a psak and then had to issue a re-psak. He had to redo the psak. As they pointed out, that there was problems with the first way that he issued the psak. And that if I have one or two people that are traveling, so then I can only make an area of a base assignment using these inferior enclosures of just lavud walls. If, however, there are three people, so then you can make a kol sarchan as much as I need. Not more than I need, but as much as I need. Now, what does that mean, not more than I need? Meaning I can't make it in excess of two sa'ah greater than what I need. If I make it in excess of two sa'ah, that's no good. The entire enclosure is no good. And the Gemara give examples about that. What if my population changes over Shabbos? Where we were Shayara at the beginning of Shabbos, we were three, and Rachmanos, we're now two. Over the course of Shabbos, somebody dies. Or conversely, what if we're two and then we become three? So this is a machlokus amarayim between Rav Huna and Rav Yitzchak. The Gemara concludes that according to Shitas Rav Huna, Shabbos is goreim, which means to say that if we start with a certain status going into Shabbos, that status remains even though the population changes over Shabbos. If the Gemara wants to take this machlokus Rav Huna Rav Yitzchak, move it into a machlokas tanaim, Rav Yehuda and Rav Yosi, in cases where walls actually fall down over Shabbos. The Gemara says the cases are not comparable. And finally, the Shita of the Chachamim and the Mishnah, who say that you're having an allowance, in which regardless of how many people are, you can always make an enclosure, kol tzarchan, as much as you need. That's exactly like the Tanakhama. The Gemara notes the subtle difference between the Tanakhama and the Shita of the Chachamim. Tanakhama gives an allowance, but only when traveling. The Chachamim give an allowance even when you're not traveling. Okay. And finally, the last mission that we dealt with is, if you're a soldier, various dispensations. The mission points to four dispensations that are given to a soldier: the collection of wood, the exemption from having to wash your hands, the exemption of having takeoff Chumas and Maisos from Demai, and the exemption from Eruv. Each one of these points in the Mishnah gets further qualified. Just quick, as a quick summary, in terms of bringing wood, so this is not harkened back to the institution of Yoshua. Yoshua allowed you to collect basically bushes from other people's properties. Nobody should care about that. We should all be like a little bit more relaxed, even though obviously we have territory and we have properties. And don't walk on my property, but there should be some sort of relaxation so that we don't all end up killing one another. Okay, slightly exaggerated, but you get the point. And then then as far as the soldier is concerned, he can actually take lumber. In other words, because the community understands the importance and significance of the soldier, so therefore the soldier can help himself to taking lumber off of people's properties. There's no issue of gzela as it relates to taking wood. The second one is not having to wash your hands. The Gemara says that allowance was given for mayim rishonim, not mayim achronim. Mayim achronim, there, if you don't wash your hands after you come into contact with salt, so there's a chance that you are going to blind yourself, and so therefore mayim achronim is a chova. Mayim achronim bizman hazeh, we touched on the issue this morning. Udemai, the allowance of not having to take off chumas and maisos when purchasing from the Amah Aretz, and most of the Amah Aretz take off chumas and maisos, the soldier and the ani do not take off. So this is shitas beisila, which our Mishnah pasuk like. And finally, eruv. Which eruv are the soldiers excused from? Only from eruv chatzeros, not eruv tchumim.